are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks. Welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
You are listening to the Kevin Smith Show.
You know, I've had trouble with that all week. Ever since the seminar. Promise you, over the weekend, we'll find out what's causing that. Welcome to the show, and whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet Earth, thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the first time. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. Let me remind you, today's the last day of this offer, and I'm not really sure we're going to repeat this offer. This offer has to do with our members area and the official Kevin Smith Show coffee mug, which you see me use most nights here on the show. If you sign up for our members area, you become a member on an annual basis. Sign up for an annual membership. We're going to send you one of those coffee mugs, and we will dispatch it to you as soon as we get notified by PayPal that you have signed up, which is within a couple of minutes after you sign up at PayPal. All right, and this Saturday night, that means tomorrow night, is the first Saturday of the month, is it not? And so, as is my habit, I will be in the chat room tomorrow night. I might be just, 5-10 minutes late, but I don't think so. And the reason for that is I have a meeting just before time. Now, what time should you go to the chat room and see if I'm there? Well, the same time that this show starts, Monday through Friday. So whatever the time is in your time zone right now, that's the time tomorrow night to check that chat room out. And I look forward to chatting with you in the members area chat room tomorrow night. This is Friday. That means the K-Files e-zine will start going out tonight. So that's our free weekly newsletter. If you are not yet subscribed, ask yourself, what kind of sense does that make? It's free. And you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. And in the K-Files e-zine, we always put updates about what's happening with the show. We put articles of interest. We put links to interesting videos. It's a veritable cornucopia of information. And it's free. All right. So go over to my website, which is kevinsmithshow.com. And you'll see a little button that says K-Files e-zine. It's got red letters. You can't miss it. Click that. Takes about 10 seconds or less to subscribe, and then you'll begin receiving your very own copy of the K-Files e-zine each and every week. And like I said, we start sending it out tonight after the show. It's a big list. It takes about 7 hours to send all of them. And so if you want to get this issue, you need to go subscribe right now, all right? And that's at kevinsmithshow.com. Click where it says K-Files. last night I dealt with this alleged hoax of UFO incidents. I have gotten lots of email about that. I'm not through with it. There's more to this story than meets the eye. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As I said before the break, last night I dealt with this story. It's moving across the news, all across the country and around the world like a tidal wave, about two guys, Chris Russo and Joe Rudy, who have stepped up and said, hey, you know what? All of those UFO sightings reported in the area of Morristown, New Jersey, earlier this year, we did it. It was a hoax, and we did it. And I dealt with that last night on the show. During the show and after the show, I received a few emails directing me to videos or to articles that alleged to show that indeed it was a hoax and that these two guys did it. And I thank you for all of those. I looked at every one of them. I thank you for those. However, that was not the point of what I was dealing with last night. The point was this, and I'm going tonight to deal with that point again and go further. The point was that, first of all, when any UFO sighting is reported anywhere in the world, the media will publish anything they can get their hands on that would tend to discredit the witnesses. And the court of public opinion always demands of UFO investigators and UFO researchers, they demand evidence, evidence, evidence. And then when the evidence is provided, whatever the evidence is, it is taken apart rigorously to see if there's any inconsistencies in the evidence. Well, fair enough. That is as it should be. I have no complaint with that. My point is that I just think the same rigorous standard should be applied to people who claim that they have hoaxed a UFO incident. You know, there are many reasons why a person might hoax or claim to have hoaxed a UFO incident. I do not believe that this Morristown spate of sightings was a UFO incident. Neither do I believe that it was a hoax. Now, those of you who listen to this show regularly know where I'm headed with this. I don't believe anything. What I say is that the actual evidence will state the facts. It will tell the story. And at the present time, ladies and gentlemen, there are two sets of evidence in play here. First of all, there's the eyewitness stories, what people said they saw. And then there are the eyewitness videos of what people who were seeing this shot. They shot a lot of these videos. On the other side, the other bit of evidence will be the stories of these two hoaxers, what they say, and the videos they made. Now, the press, the media, just assumes that it's necessary for you to believe. You must believe either one or the other. And that's because the press, the media, very, very rarely even get within range to touch critical thinking. Now, the media is hyping this story, and they're pushing these hoaxers' stories as if they are the truth, and they may be the truth. That's not the point. I am not willing to believe. I am willing to know, but not to believe. So the first thing I want to know is from you, from our audience. Based on a lot of the emails I've gotten, I'd like to know why you're so willing to let the media off the hook here. Why are you not willing to demand of these hoaxers and of the media the same rigorous evidence that they demand of UFO witnesses and UFO investigators? Now, I want to read you a statement from these two hoaxers, Chris Russo and Joe Rudy. And I quote, "Are UFO investigators simply charlatans looking to make a quick buck off of human gullibility? Or are they alarmists using bad science to back up their biased opinions that extraterrestrial life is routinely visiting our planet?" End quote. As if, I mean, think about this critically, as if their opinion is not biased in the direction that extraterrestrial life is not visiting the planet. But that's their statement. Their statement is in the form of questions. It says, are UFO investigators simply charlatans looking to make a quick buck off of human gullibility, or are they alarmists using bad science to back up their biased opinions that extraterrestrial life is routinely visiting our planet? Well, Mr. Russo and Mr. Rudy, some UFO investigators are indeed charlatans, and when we who are involved in any way in the UFO community discover one of these charlatans, we tend to expose them rather severely ourselves. Some are alarmists. We tend to expose them as well. But it is likewise true that some UFO hoaxers are charlatans and some are alarmists who raise the cry that anyone who thinks that extraterrestrial life may exist is gullible. Now, I'm not saying that you two bright young men are charlatans or alarmists. I am merely using the same broad brush you used when you painted all UFO investigators. You guys hold yourselves out to the public as being rational, reasonable, and you just did this as an experiment to prove how gullible other people are. Well, you should be aware that some very serious, highly educated, high-ranking people are among UFO investigators and among UFO witnesses. For instance, U.S. Air Force Major Donald Kehoe, Dr. Bruce Maccabee, nuclear physicist Stanton Friedman, astronaut Gordon Cooper. Yeah, that's right, astronaut Gordon Cooper. Astronaut Dr. Edgar Mitchell, U.S. Air Force Major Jesse Marcel, FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover, President Harry S. Truman, President Jimmy Carter, President Ronald Reagan, Dr. J. Allen Hynek, and this list could go on for page after page after page. Now, if we apply to you the same rigorous investigative standards as are demanded of UFO investigators, and why shouldn't we? You and your story have a lot of dangling participles. In fact, there are enough unanswered questions here and unproven assertions to make one wonder if you are, wittingly or unwittingly, part of a disinformation operation. On the line with me is an expert in counterintelligence and disinformation ops, having run those very type of operations himself as a U.S. Air Force OSI special agent, Walter Bosley. Walter, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me come, and it's always good to be here.
Well, you've heard my opening tirade, and you know something a bit about this whole affair. Am I right or wrong when I say that there's a lot of dangling participles here and a lot of things that make you at least raise an eyebrow and say, I wonder if this could, I mean, let me put it this way. When I look at this, I have to wonder if this was a planned disinformation operation to discredit, to provide discredit to UFO investigators. And I have to wonder because it matches almost to a T exactly the way I would have done it. What do you say?
Yeah, no, you are right because, you know, the biggest thing that stands out to me is that in their own logic, there's only two options, and that's that they're either, you know, these UFO people are either con men or kooks.
Mm-hmm.
And that, they don't offer any third option that is reasonable or sane. And to me, in my mind, that smacks of some type of perception management, you know, social perception, definitely, it could be said.
Now, Walter, last year, mm-hmm. 2008, back in May of 2008, we had lights in the skies here in the Phoenix area. And they were very similar to the ones that were seen in this Morristown spate of sightings. And then after the videos taken by the public started showing up, a couple of guys jumped up and said, we did it. Just like in this case. And their story was, well, we did it with helium-filled balloons, and we used fishing line, which is monofilament line, and we attached flares to the fishing line and the other end of the line to the balloons and sent them aloft. We did it. And they said that they launched them from their backyard.
Right.
Well, whenever that story broke, I got on the air, and we talked about this, and I'm trying to remember. I'm not sure. You may have even been with me to talk about this, but I pointed out some real problems technologically with this. And then, after that show aired, the TV news people tried to do follow-up. They went out to the house where these guys are supposed to be living. No one would come to the door. No one would answer the phone. And so they interviewed neighbors around to find out had anybody seen anything. There were several neighbors that had been out at the time when these balloons were supposed to have been launched from this backyard. And one family lives just two or three houses down. They were in their backyard having a barbecue, just the family and some friends. And had flares on balloons been launched out of a backyard, just two or three houses away,
right?
They say we would have seen them, and I know they would.
Absolutely, I agree with that. That's something hard to miss.
And then other UFO investigators got involved and started digging into who these two guys were, and found that one of them, at least, is Navy. Well, once that went public, we've heard no more from these two guys. They already were not answering the telephone. They already were not answering the door. And now they seem to have evaporated into thin air.
I was just going to ask, do they still even live there?
Well, I cannot honestly say that I know that. But, you know, other people that have been trying to further the story have gotten absolutely nowhere, can't get in touch with them at all.
Right.
So, then here we jump forward to January of 2009. We have lights in the skies above Morristown, New Jersey. And I find this to be very, very interesting because it's almost as if this story followed the script from the first story, with the exception that the two gentlemen who said they did it went public, put videos on YouTube and so forth. I find a lot of problems with the story. I find excessive problems with the reporting, and that was the point of what I said last night. It's really the point of what I'm saying here tonight, is that the press isn't digging into these guys. The press isn't digging into their story. They're just putting out the story and saying, oh, they say it was a hoax, and they say they did it, and here's some video to prove it, and ha, ha, ha. Well, here's a problem. Here's a big problem, evidentiary-wise. All that alleged evidence, those videos, they shot the videos. There's no date and time stamp on the videos, and... I've had this exchange with through email with some people over the past 24 hours, and they say, yeah, but you can hear them on there when they call the TV station to report that they're seeing lights in the sky. And they say the date. That's true. You hear them. You don't hear anyone from the TV station. And so there's absolutely no evidence to support that this is real. Now, I want to make it clear that I don't believe that the hoax is a hoax. Nor do I believe that the UFO sightings were in fact flying saucer or extraterrestrial. I don't believe anything about this. I'm looking at the evidence. And there's one more bit of evidence here, Walter, that's just really interesting. The story that it's a hoax didn't come out until after UFO hunters... the TV show featured the Morristown sightings, and the thing began to gain traction and get legs, and then the story about it being a hoax comes out.
Isn't that interesting?
And as you know, in any investigation, some of the most important evidence has to do with nailing down dates and times.
Of course.
Now, if you publish a book, and then I want to say, because you are a publisher, and then I want to say, we had a conversation where I gave him that idea, and that was last year, and I'm going to sue you. And then I show up in court, and I have a recording where you hear me talking about this idea and saying your name, and giving the date, but we never hear you, they'll toss it right out of court. We have to take a break. I'm just getting started. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Walter Bosley. He is a bona fide expert in counterintelligence and disinformation operations. Walter, if I were these two guys, assuming that everything they say is true, I mean, the evidence that they provide is spurious at best, but assuming that it's true, if I were these two guys, I'd be looking around, I'd be checking my appointments for the last 8 months or so and seeing which of all those people that I met with that talked to me about, you guys ought to do an experiment like this.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be looking into if those people are related in any way to counterintelligence.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You'd want to look at these guys' associates and even acquaintances, in a period of time. And I'd go back as far as a year. But, you'd want to look at their associations. You'd want to look at, what did they do professionally, their educational background, that kind of thing, what organizations they're associated with in that way.
Well, they are affiliated with, and by affiliated, I don't mean they work for, but their material has certainly been featured on a well-known skeptic website. Now, just because people are skeptics, I don't think they're stupid. That's not the point. Just because they're skeptics does not indicate that they are disinformers. A really good UFO investigator has to start out trying to disprove the incident.
Mm-hmm.
And the best UFO investigators are people who try hard to prove that the incident is somehow not a bona fide UFO. And when they've gotten to the end of the line and they can't prove that it is not a bona fide UFO, and the only option left is that it is a UFO, then they say, okay, well, you know, as far as we know, and as far as we can tell, this is a real UFO, but only after some heavy skepticism.
Right.
Now, you're an expert in counter-intel. Let's just play a hypothetical here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that you were assigned the task of getting people to poo-poo the idea that those things over Phoenix were, in 2008, were really just flares on weather balloons. And you tried it, and you did the thing, and the guys did what they did, and then kind of got caught, you know, with the facts. The facts being that no balloons were launched out of that backyard at the date and time they said, and there are witnesses to that fact. And then these guys won't answer telephones, won't talk to the press, and then one of them turns out to be Navy. Now, you handled that in my hypothetical, and you would have learned from that. Oops, that didn't go too well.
Right.
Then let's, in this hypothetical, say that there was one real sighting up in Morristown, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Just one. And you were given, again, the task of defusing that and making people chuckle at it.
Mm-hmm.
What would you do now?
Well, it would be not a bad choice to knowing, knowing what you did in the past that you know, came across with a certain perception, you know, to reuse that, because then you can establish a pattern. And when you're wanting to control the perception, particularly of such a wide group as the public, you know, you're talking millions of people, reinforcement is very important. So the reinforcement element of this are the flares with balloons. Now, yes, it could be argued that the guys in Morristown read the article about the guys in Phoenix, you know, who said they did this with flares and balloons, and they said, well, we'll do the same thing. Of course, that's possible. But we're talking about a situation where, you know, there's reason to believe that it was just more than, you know, a couple of guys just seeing this in a newspaper account. So you would do that. You would reenact, so to speak, what was done in Phoenix, so that your public would go, oh, yeah, it's just another couple of guys with the balloons and flares thing. So that then, down the road, you wouldn't even have to do anything. People would assume, oh, yeah, it's just some guys with flares and balloons.
Yeah.
Now, the mistake, you know, yeah, if there's a, you know, some type of hole in the story that, you know, further scrutiny illuminates, you know, throws a light on to where it's, uh-oh, you know, this isn't working, well, yeah, you want to fill in the gaps. And in this case, filling in the gap is, well, let's have some proof that the guys were lighting flares and attaching them to balloons. So you make sure that that's covered, absolutely.
In other words, then, you would make sure that they do some video.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's say while you're trying to get your plan in place, a very popular television show does a sort of an expose of these sightings. And in this expose, they talk to some military guys, or a military guy, at least one. I forget, maybe there were two, who says, well, looking at that video, it doesn't appear to have the characteristics of flares. And there's no smoke, they're not swaying in the breeze. It doesn't appear that that would be flares. Mm-hmm. All right, and then you have, and you know, that all airs, and you've got this guy, Bill Burns, who says, as far as he's concerned, they were definitely not flares. Mm-hmm. Okay? And so the TV show plays, the public sees it, it's gaining traction, and so now you have your guys do videos. Would you get them to do backdating on what they say?
If it's possible, you definitely would, you know, cover that base if it's possible to do that. Or, you know, it's the problem I have with no date at all is that anybody looking at it goes, wait a minute, everybody's used to now using video, and they're used to the fact that the date-time thing is on there. And I think most people who've ever used one of these cameras would become, in a case like this where you're looking at something as evidence of something, the first thing that pops to mind is, where's the date time? Where's the date time? So it's kind of suspicious that there's this video and there's no date time.
Now, they're outside when they do this, and one thing I would point out to everyone who goes and watches these videos is that watch it, and you will see that as they light these flares and send them aloft, there is a huge amount of smoke coming from these flares. Notice that.
Yeah.
Also, notice they're outside, and then they say it's their homemade video of documenting what they did.
Mm-hmm.
All right, in that video, he says, okay, now I'm going to call the news station. The television news station. So he calls someone. He's obviously on a cell phone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why does he not put the speaker on so that we can hear the other side of the conversation?
Well, one of two. Go ahead.
No, we hear him talk as if he's talking to someone at the news station, at the TV station. We don't hear the other side of the conversation at all. And all you have to do is press a button and turn your cell phone into a speakerphone and record what they say.
Absolutely. And the fact that they don't, two things come to mind immediately. One of them is that these two guys are actually, you know, really knuckleheads that were doing this, and they just didn't think to do that, or they didn't do it on purpose because maybe they weren't really talking to the authorities. Maybe the person on the other end, you know, wasn't who they said it was, you know, supposed to be.
It may have been no one at all. It
may have been no one at all. And the beauty of the question, the fact that we're questioning that these guys could just be a couple of knuckleheads, that could have been engineered into the whole thing. Because the whole thing about, if you want to cast doubt and aspersion on something, you know, try to engineer in as much doubt as possible. And it could have been a product of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to reiterate for everyone, I'm not saying they didn't hoist balloons skyward. I'm not saying that there were not flares tied to them. We've got some more things we're going to talk about with the flares. But what I am saying is that this whole story is as full of holes as Swiss cheese. It may be exactly what they say. It may be precisely what they say it is.
Mm-hmm.
But normally, the truth doesn't have that many holes in it. Normally, there are a few things you can't get aligned real well. Usually, it doesn't have these big, huge, gaping holes in it.
Right.
However, a manufactured event will, because the human mind in manufacturing an event cannot predict all contingencies. Right. And all the contingencies will happen, and that leaves holes in the manufactured event.
Yes.
So, maybe they really did this hoax all on their own, and it's not part of a disinformation or counterintelligence operation. If so, I have to say to these guys, what you did, how you did it, and the holes in your story make this a perfect disinformation operation, and someone should have run it.
Mm-hmm. They have a future in the intelligence community.
Well, I'm not sure about that. Maybe as dupes.
Yeah, well, okay. Let me say again, they have a future in the intelligence community. You know, there's another angle here to look at that came to my mind that concerns me more than if, let's say, the military was just simply trying to cover up, you know, some technology, some vital defense technology, because you know my position on that. I'm all for that.
Mm-hmm.
The other concern that I have is maybe it's somebody else, not the military, because I'll tell you, in my experience, this doesn't exactly have the signature of, you know, any kind of military perception management to cover for some technology. There's certain aspects of it that are, you know, just too sloppy. There's mm-hmm. certain aspects of it that, you know, the military, why would they do this? You know, this kind of thing. My concern is that there is indeed some type of social perception engineering going on that has more to do with, you know, just that, just social engineering and social control. For instance, you know, look how useful it will be to, you know, get anyone who believes in UFOs, anyone who believes in psychic abilities, anyone who believes in Atlantis, anyone who's, you know, open to alternative theories or let me rephrase this.
Walter, we have to take a break, and we'll pick up there when we come back. The music's taking over and the mics will die. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back. Walter, whenever we went away for break, you were saying that your main concern is that there may be some kind of social perception modification going on here. So I want you to complete your thought on that.
Okay. Basically, whoever doesn't agree to drink the prescribed Kool-Aid will be labeled as someone who's insane or mentally unbalanced. And this will include anyone who persists in the belief that UFOs are not what we're told. Pardon?
No, it's just you.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm hearing an echo. So that anyone who does not believe in the prescribed theories and what we're supposed to believe will be labeled as mentally imbalanced. This will include people who, like I just said, persist in the belief that UFOs are something other than what we're told, persist in the belief that Atlantis existed, persist in the belief that, for instance, that, you know, not everybody who owns a gun is a crazy person. And this is very timely for what happened today. You know, an event is taken and is spun in such a way and then packaged up and presented with a, see, this is why people should not have guns. And, you know, I watched Diane Sawyer do that tonight by calling this shooting today in Binghamton America's signature crime, which offended me on, you know, multiple levels. But it was pure spin and packaging. And
well, mass media is offensive on every level.
Yeah, and but that's what I'm talking about, is I'm concerned that there's a deeper, larger social engineering thing going on, and, you know, UFOs are part of it.
It could be. It very well could be. one of, you know, you pointed this out, that the statement by these two guys gives every indication that they were coached in perception here. When they asked this question, two questions, are UFO investigators simply charlatans looking to make a quick buck off of human gullibility, or are they alarmists using bad science to back up their biased opinions that extraterrestrial life is routinely visiting our planet? These guys are saying that as if they don't think what they think is biased.
Right.
You know, I have a question, couple of questions here for these guys. Now, I did a little research on traffic flares. They're called road flares, or they're called fusees. Mm-hmm. And I did some research to see what other people say about them. I told folks last night what I know about them, which is quite a bit, because I've used them as a cop working traffic accidents. But this is the president and CEO of ProFlare Incorporated, the Stuart, Florida-based company that promotes ProFlare. And he's either making a speech or he wrote this, but this is a quote. Saving lives and saving millions of dollars by replacing the dangerous 30-minute incendiary road flare are our primary concerns. His name is Martin, Mr. Martin, Lou Martin Jr. And he continues, listen to this. The winds have been blowing for some time regarding law changes that would outlaw the incendiary road flare. And he's talking about road flares. He's in the business, and he's talking about them being dangerous. Now, I went to another website, pulled up a fact sheet about fusees, and one of the things that it lists under civilian use is for firefighters. Sometimes firefighters who fight wildfires carry these things with them, and if they get into a situation where they have to burn an escape route, they have to set an escape fire. Because sometimes where they're working happens to be humid. It happens to be the ground and the brush and so forth happens to be moist and not dry and crackly like it is out here in the Arizona desert. They need something that can start a fire in those conditions. And guess what they use? They use these road flares. And then it goes on to talk about there are environmental concerns because these red flares are a pyrotechnic composition, and it's a mixture of various things that cause the flares to burn long and red. It's usually based on strontium nitrate. That's a chemical compound, and it's used as an oxidizer. And it also gives them their red color. The flame has a red color. Sometimes it also contains potassium nitrate. This is a naturally occurring mineral and a source of nitrogen. Or potassium perchlorate. Potassium perchlorate is a chemical formula that is actually called potassium chlorine oxygen 4. And is a strong oxidizing agent mixed with charcoal, sulfur, sawdust, aluminum, and magnesium. And they burn hot, they burn long, they put out a lot of smoke, and they're used by firefighters to set fires. Now, my question to, you see, one of these gentlemen says, one of these gentlemen who says, are the UFO investigators simply charlatans, or are they alarmists? I want to ask the same question of you, sir. You're a science teacher. Are science teachers, because you are one, should we paint science teachers and say, are they charlatans, are they alarmists, or are they just stupid for setting flares burning into the air with helium balloons when it is known that these things are dangerous, there are states considering outlawing the use of them, even by police, because they're dangerous. And you set them five, you said five at one time, nine at one time. On five different occasions, you set these burning, dangerous chemical mixtures into the air. So are you a charlatan, science teacher? Are you an alarmist, just raising the alarm that people are gullible? Are you just stupid? Or were you controlled as part of an operation to set in motion a tidal wave against UFO investigators? Now, it's one of those. But I want to ask you, using the same grammatical and literary devices that you used, and I got this right off of the website, the Skeptic website, I think it's called eSkeptic, and this is your quote: "Are UFO investigators simply charlatans?" So you're painting all UFO investigators with the same brush. Are they alarmists using bad science? Yeah, some of them are charlatans, and some of them are alarmists using bad science. But not all of them. Some of them are very serious, respected scientists, astronauts, pilots, both military and commercial. Now, and you're painting them all with that same brush. So using that same literary device that you used, are science teachers charlatans? Are they alarmists? Are they stupid? Would all of them do this stupid thing that you say you did? Well, I don't think so. I would certainly hope not, and I certainly don't think that's the case. But you see, what's good for the goose, Mr. Russo and Mr. Rudy, is good for the gander. And what you say about UFO investigators applies to you. The same question applies to you. Walter, I think these guys did set flares on fire. I think they did attach them to the balloons. But you know one thing they didn't show us?
Mm-hmm.
Flares spew out this chemical slag.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, it's like ash. But it's if you just lay a flare on the ground and let it burn, do it on concrete, let it burn, come back after it's burned, take a look at what's left.
Right.
There's
on highways and streets after there's accidents. You can see that laying there.
Yeah. Okay, now, when that spews out of the flare as it burns, what they did is their video shows them putting monofilament light around the bottom of the flare and then using duct tape to tape it on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So now the burning part of the flare is pointed towards Earth, towards the ground.
Mm-hmm.
As it burns, that slag, as I call it, will be spewing out of there, and you will see... In the nighttime, you will see these red glowing globs drop out of that flare. Now, you won't see them as they go all the way to the ground, but in the first few feet as they come out, they're still glowing red.
Will you see them if, you know, the balloons are high up? Will you see the slag coming out, or will you just see the light of the flare?
I'll address that when we come back from this break. We'll be back right after this. Now, when we went away for break, Walter, you had just asked the question, would you be able to see that if the slag glowing as it drops out of the flares, they were at a pretty high altitude? Well, that would depend on ambient conditions. If you were looking at these things through binoculars, the answer would be yes. If you were looking at these things from a position where you didn't have a lot of ambient city light, I think the answer would be yes, provided they were not downrange a great distance from you. So, if they were, say, maybe they were pretty high, but they were not downrange several miles, then you would see it. Plus, from the illumination, look, road flares are for illumination. That's the purpose of road flares.
Mm-hmm.
And from the illumination around the flare, you ought to be able to see a trail of smoke. Now, whenever you watch these guys' videos, you see a tremendous amount of smoke.
Right.
As they're launching them.
But when they get in the air, you have a factor of wind. Would that be blowing the smoke away?
Yeah, but you have a trail. And
you should. There should still be smoke. You're right. It should be there. But it's like you said. You've got to analyze it, dissect it.
Yeah.
And as we're dissecting it, we're finding that there should have been a lot more evidence of it being flares.
Yeah. But more importantly is the video that they are offering up. And it, like I said, this thing may be absolutely true what they're saying. But the video doesn't provide evidence that it is true. The video provides evidence that we're watching these guys use balloons and launch flares. That's all. There's no date and time stamp. When they call to report, it's supposed to be like a hoaxed report to the TV news that, hey, we're seeing something incredible in the air. There's lights. There's, you know, and we'll try to get video of it. We don't hear the TV station. Now, the point that I'm making here is not trying to prove that all of this hoax story is a hoax. What I am trying to do here is show you folks that there are great gaping holes in this that have to be resolved in order for you to make a rational decision about it. If we apply to their story the same rigorous set of standards that get applied to UFO reports, no matter who reports them, even if it's Dr. Edgar Mitchell, astronaut, his what he says goes through the sifter just like everybody else that reports anything about UFOs or extraterrestrials. And people try to prove that he's not telling the truth. Now, if we apply that same set of standards to this story, it flunks the test. And that doesn't mean that the hoax story is itself a hoax. It may be true. But I hope Russo and Rudy and the numbskulls and nitwits with whom they associate, and I know which forums they are in, I hope that you see, with egg on your face, that you can't stand the heat of the same test you demand for UFOs. And when the same standards are applied to you and your alleged evidence, you flunk the test. Or at least I think so. What do you think, Walter?
Oh, I'm in agreement with you on that. There, you know, the close scrutiny brings up just as many questions as they would have in their scrutiny of a UFO case.
Yeah. I also want to make it clear that I am not saying they should not ask the questions they ask about UFO cases. I think that skeptics, a real skeptic that really examines the evidence, that actually really does examine the evidence and is yet skeptical, provides a great service for the community of UFO researchers and investigators, and that is those skeptics are holding UFO investigator and researchers' feet to the fire. Mm. And that's as it should be. That, I mean, how else are we going to get to the truth?
Absolutely.
Now, I'm going to open the telephone lines in just a moment, but Walter, give us a rundown on what you see in this that would indicate to you that it might have been a counter-intel or disinformation op. Now, you've already explained why you don't think it was military, and I would agree with that. The military, although that you can't anticipate all contingencies, they generally do anticipate more than this one does.
Sure. And I doubt that they would have an apparent, I don't see any apparent military objective or anything they would get out of this as I see it, as based on what we know of this. To me, this is much more a social engineering thing, and the military gets involved with perception management when it comes to, you know, protecting their assets. Mm-hmm. But this, to me, is, as I said, it's more social engineering. Number one, you have the repetitive balloons and flares theme. Now, the argument that, as I said before, well, these guys read what the other guys did, so they copied it. Yeah, that's very possible. It could also be possible that whoever an associate of theirs that influenced them to do it is, that person might have been the one to suggest, I think, as you said earlier, hey, what about these guys out in Phoenix? They just use balloons and flares. You ought to do that. You know, there's the same method.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be that subtle.
If I wanted to do something that would cause a tidal wave of ridicule against the UFO investigator and researcher community, this provides a perfect script for it. And what I would do, though, is I would not make it traceable back to me or my organization.
Right.
What I would do is I would join the forums that these guys are in,
mm-hmm.
and start suggesting things like this in the forums. And somebody will pick it up and run with it. And when they do, it can be used.
And then the people who they use are on their own from that point, and might not even realize that they've been used. That's the important thing to remember here.
All right, now I won't ask for you to say yes or no to this, and I will not say yes or no. But is it, I'll ask it in a way where you can say yes or no. Is it within the realm of plausibility that an operation can be run so that people are used without even knowing they were used, did exactly what you want them to do, and they never trace it to you, and no one else does either? Is that plausible?
Yes, and my only caveat is you have to define the degree of exactly, but essentially, yes, I'm going to answer yes on that. It is.
And a lot of times this, look, folks, you see this on television, and it's not, while it may be in some fictional police stuff, the concept itself is not fictional. And that's where the police will plant a story. They put a story on the street that isn't true. But by watching where that story runs to, they gain the information of who's connected to a crime.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can put the pieces together. And sometimes it takes 20 years to do it, but they get it done. And all the people who passed that story had no idea they were participants in an operation. They had no idea that they were participating with the police in an operation. And this happens all the time. It is old. It goes way, way back in history. This is not a new tactic. And so when I look at this thing, the overall picture doesn't look to me like that it's exactly as has been reported. It looks to me as if it's orchestrated. Couple of things about this, Walter, that make it look like it's orchestrated.
Mm-hmm.
We've already mentioned one, and that is They didn't come out with their story that it was a hoax until after it aired on UFO Hunters. Now, I said last night, and I will say again, I don't know Bill Burns. He's not a friend of mine, certainly not an enemy. I just don't know him. And I rarely watch UFO Hunters simply because I don't have time to watch TV of any kind. I have seen it, but...
I've met him once.
Okay. But the point is, I have absolutely no interest in defending Bill Burns personally. But after this thing was on UFO Hunters, then these guys jump up with this story. That looks to me as if it's managed. Another thing about this, you know, I read a couple of things here about these road flares. So dangerous are they that there are states considering outlawing their use, even by the police. Mm-hmm. So here we've got guys that put them on a balloon, say they did, mm-hmm. sent them off into the air. Any one of these could have burned the monofilament line, and certainly as the flare gets close to burning out, it's close to the end of the flare.
Yes.
Then the flame and the heat is up near the monofilament line to which it is attached, and monofilament line generally will, with very little heat, just melt, and these stubs of burning flare would have fallen to the ground. Okay, let me stipulate that maybe it's possible for you to do this and they don't burn the line. But that's a very real danger. It could happen.
They said that they attached the flares to the line with tape. Now you ask yourself, okay, the first assumption is duct tape, and so you say, okay, how...
No, it was duct tape. I saw that in the video.
Okay, so you got to ask yourself, you know, how flammable is this duct tape? Could it possibly have not got to the line because of the tape? But I'm thinking, I've never tried to burn duct tape, but maybe that's an interesting experiment to do.
Yeah, and that might be the case. But the burning slag dropping to the ground would also be a tremendous danger. And so the second thing that makes this appear to me to be a managed situation is that they have now been arrested and charged with a misdemeanor. And I think the misdemeanor was disorderly conduct. The prosecutor on television made the statement that, well, there are far more serious charges that we could have put on them, but, you know, we decided on this misdemeanor charge. And when asked why, he said, well, you know, it's kind of like you don't want to swat a fly with a sledgehammer. Okay, that sounds reasonable, but I know prosecutors. I've spent my life in court. I know prosecutors. And the practice is to charge someone. This is the normal practice. You charge someone with the highest possible crime that their actions fit, so that they will plea bargain to a lower crime that's still in range of what their actions fit.
Sure. And I'll throw on there, you know, prosecutors want cases.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they exist for. It's like a motorcycle cop. They exist primarily for to enforce, you know, and get traffic violators. You know, it is said, you've been a cop, it's that mm-hmm. the guys in the car are more likely, you know, to kind of let you go on something than a motorcycle cop is. Prosecutors are like, you know, the motorcycle cop, he gets you, he's going to get you. You're going to get a ticket if he stops you. Prosecutors want cases. They're not in the habit of just, you know, kind of willy-nilly, well, we'll take a case if we can get it or not. They want a case.
Yeah, and it is their normal practice. In 50 states, it is their normal practice to swat flies with sledgehammers.
Exactly, yeah, because they want convictions.
So if you do something, let's say you do something that causes someone's death, and what you did could be charged legitimately as a second-degree murder.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're going, maybe it's a little bit, you know, borderline, but they could charge you with it. So they do, in order to get you to agree to plead guilty to involuntary manslaughter.
Right.
So they get their conviction. They don't have to fight it hard in court. You're going to plead guilty. It's done. They check a box, and they've got another number in the win column. This is the way prosecutors work throughout the country. I'm not saying anything about bad about prosecutors. I'm telling you how it works. I know it works that way. I know for sure it works that way. All right. I'm going to open up the telephone line. And again, I want before I open up the telephone line, I want to reiterate for everyone, I am not saying that these guys didn't hoax it. What I am doing is applying to their story the same rigorous standards they demand be applied to UFO investigators and researchers. And what we see when we apply to their story the same standards is their story pretty much falls apart. It may be true, but it doesn't hold, it doesn't bear the weight of the standards that I'm applying to it, and they're fair standards. These are standards, if we were going to try and prove in court that they actually did this hoax, these are the standards that would be demanded in court. All right, now, and actually, there would be even heavier standards. All right, the telephone line is open, and the telephone number is 602-539-9580, 602-539-9580, or toll-free, 883-223-4599. Again, the toll-free number, 888-223-4599. If you have a question or if you have a comment about all this, maybe you think that I am absolutely all wet and around the corner on this. Okay, fine. Call me and tell me what you think and why you think it. I'd be glad to hear it. All right, let's go to the telephone line and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Brent from Wyoming.
Hi, Brent.
Kevin, I have... This goes a little bit beyond local, because when I was watching those videos last night, you could hear jets in the background.
Okay.
That's interfering with airspace, launching those balloons, unless they had somebody backing them up.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. So what you're saying then is it's far more serious than this misdemeanor charge.
Oh, yeah, it's a federal offense.
Yeah. Hadn't thought about that, but you're exactly right. Absolutely.
I should get involved with this one.
Who should?
That might be what they were referring to as there's a lot worse things they could have charged them with. You know, that right
there. I
would
have charged them with it.
Well, and we argued that earlier, that a prosecutor absolutely, under normal circumstances, a prosecutor would charge him with it. So, again, why?
Well, we lost him. Don't know what happened. I didn't push that button, but we lost him. Go ahead with your thought, though.
Well, he brought up a very, very good point is, gosh, why weren't these guys charged with something like that? So look at the day and age we live in with the you know, the whole terrorism threat thing. And, I mean, some guy goofing around with a laser pointer at an airport gets, you know, federal charges against him. And you're telling me guys lighting flares? You know, he's right.
Yeah. And look, I think they probably did exactly what they said they did. I just don't think they acted alone entirely in this.
Right.
Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
How you gentlemen doing this evening?
Good.
Good.
I was wondering, because of your interest on this, is that why these people have been charged, or was it for another reason?
Oh, I don't know. I certainly I hadn't even thought about that. I don't think that I don't think there's any connection with the fact that I took an interest in this and that I did a show on it last night. I mean, if I in any way assisted in their being charged, then I'm glad. But I certainly don't think so.
Yeah, I'm just kind of curious because it seems like they were kind of blowing it off. Yeah, I could see how that can be dangerous, and you know, if it disturbs the lawful right-of-way of things or causes damage, I see how you could be held responsible. But I must admit, me as a young kid, I was the one that always got the chemistry set and on telescopes, and we, at the age of 6 or 7, and my older brothers made a Chinese candle, you know, out of a little white trash bag, you know, 5 pounds or whatever. It got a few feet off the ground before it caught on fire. We used candles.
I've done that too when I was a kid, but you know what, Terry? That's when we were kids. This is a science teacher.
Yeah.
And he's an adult, and he has the nerve as a science teacher using these chemical compounds that are in a flare to put out a very hot, bright light. He's got the nerve to launch that in the air because he wants to prove that UFO investigators are charlatans or alarmists. I mean, that's just plain stupid.
Yeah, I agree. Because I would never use a flare of that type for anything like that. It wouldn't serve the purpose. Yeah. It, actually, in my adulthood, you know, this was like a couple of years ago, when I was working for a plastic company, and their Gaylords come with this lining, and it's white on the inside, and it was silver on the outside, and I don't know what it was made out of, but it was very tough. But 6 people my size could fit inside of this, and it would cover us totally. I got them to give me one because I told them I was going to use it for to cover my furniture or whatever. I didn't want to tell them that I was going to use it for to make a basically a hot air balloon. And that's what I did with it. Now that I'm looking at it, I should have put the silver part on the inside because it would have been more visible, but I put it to the outside. And I used, you ever hear canned heat?
Sure.
I used 3 dozen of those. And I put them right in the middle, and when and they burn very light, and if they got the right air, they burn blue, so you can't really hardly see them. They kind of just flicker.
Terry, we got a break taking over. You want to hang on through the break?
Sure.
All right, hang on. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Walter Bosley. He is an expert in counterintelligence, having served as a U.S. Air Force OSI special agent working in counterintelligence. We have Terry on the telephone. You still with us, Terry?
Yes.
Okay. You were telling us about making this hot air balloon. Now, you sent it aloft with all these cans of Sterno burning. How old were you when you did this?
Actually, it was just a few years ago.
Did you send it up above a populated area?
I lifted it off out from my home.
Mm-hmm.
I waited until a really calm night with no airflow, and I let, you know, it took me about, say, 15, 20 minutes to get it where it was pretty full of heat, you know, and pretty much wanting to, you know, be able to go aloft,
mm-hmm.
You know, before I cut it loose.
Now, what was your purpose in doing this?
I was thinking that as long as those heaters would keep running, which would be about an hour or better, I was just curious if I could get this thing to make it to the Great Lakes.
Okay, now was your purpose
somewhere about 100 miles away.
All right, Terry, was your purpose in doing this to create the illusion that there was a UFO?
No, I just know what other people were out there doing, and I just wanted to, on just a natural fact, not trying to create a UFO flap. It's just my own scientific wanting to, know it all and hearing about these Chinese lanterns and all this stuff. And once it got aloft, it went pretty high pretty fast. I lost vision of it pretty quickly without using binoculars. And depending on how high this thing climbed, if it got into the jet stream, it more than likely went south instead of east. But I tried to kind of, I really didn't pay much attention by it. I listened a little bit just to hear if somebody reported something coming down their backyard or finding something. I never did hear anything about it. So,
okay. Well, I thank you for the call. I think before you do something like that again, consider what happens if it all goes wrong and that fire falls on someone's roof. That, that could get some real serious stuff going your way, and they would eventually trace it back. They'd find out where it came from. All right, thanks for the call, and the telephone line is open. The telephone number is, let's get that up on the screen, the telephone number is 602-539-9580, or toll-free at 888-223-4599. Again, 888-223-4599. I have not checked the flash messages, so let me check that and see. There are none. Yep, there is one. Just came in. Just showed up. Nigel in the United Kingdom wants to know, UFOs is the culture of its own. Real or not, I like listening to this subject. The whole topic of UFOs has generated a culture around it. But remember, Nigel, they either exist or they don't exist. And, the evidence is that they do exist. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Hi, Kevin. This is Kevin from Northern Alberta calling.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, how are you gentlemen this evening?
Good.
Good.
Good to hear you, Walter. I always like your opinion on these matters. Now, with these guys, they got charged with a misdemeanor on this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, these road flares, they burn at 1,400 degrees Fahrenheit, and they're, as you mentioned, dropping phosphorus as they burn. They're a big safety hazard here. Now, if one fell on my roof and burnt my house down, I'd be kind of ticked right off. And, what if they were doing this in Australia or California? I'm sure they would have been slapped pretty hard with, possibly starting a fire.
I think they would in Arizona and Nevada as well. We have a real problem with wildfires every season. And, you think of this as being a desert, and it is, but there's all kinds of tumbleweeds and scrub brush and things that are dead in the summertime all over this desert. And then that leads, if a fire starts there, it's going to burn toward the edge of the desert. And what's at the edge of the desert? Well, trees, people's homes. Or if it happens to be in the Phoenix area, there are homes right here in the desert. So, I think in Arizona, probably New Mexico, Nevada, California, the states that have a real wildfire problem every year, I think the prosecution would be a little more severe.
Sure. Now, I wonder if there's going to be any more ramifications from this into their personal life, like happened to the Bigfoot hoaxers. One guy ended up losing his job over it. It'd be interesting to keep our ears to the window to see what happens.
Yeah, and it wouldn't surprise me if there are ramifications or if there are not. I would suspect there will not be, because look, the majority, the masses, will buy anything the news media puts out. So, it's pretty much going to be a ha-ha-ha situation. Look, Newsweek is carrying this story. So this is not a little thing. Newsweek is carrying this story. Newspapers all over the world are carrying this story. I read an article from Austin, Texas. They're carrying the story. Whatever the mass media puts out, the masses will generally believe that dribble.
Yeah, and that's the word, dribble.
Mm-hmm. Hey, thanks for the call.
Thanks.
All right. What do you think, Walter?
I was going to say, just look what the masses in the United States alone believe during from one election to the next.
Oh, let's don't revisit all the nightmares.
Oh, no, I don't want to revisit it. But that's an example right there of, that people can, without getting into this side or that side, there's an example right there of, and it goes on all the time. Look at what gets sold based on drivel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello?
You're on the air. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes. Hi, my name is Gwen. I'm calling from Texas.
Hi, Gwen.
Hi there. Been listening to all of this, and I saw the headlines. I didn't see the actual articles about this story, but I'm wondering if, whether anybody has ever been prosecuted for anything similar to this related to a UFO.
Not to my knowledge.
Okay, and I think that's kind of interesting. I mean, even though the charge is disorderly conduct and it's very general, I'm thinking maybe this could be another little test balloon, no pun intended. Because what this would do, if it does go to trial and they are convicted, then it would set a precedent.
It would indeed. It would set a precedent.
I'm thinking, even if it is very general, then the message would be, don't perpetuate a hoax in pretending there's a UFO when there isn't one.
Mm-hmm. All right.
That way, if there is a someone perpetuates a hoax, then they're subject to prosecution. And I think that's kind of interesting if it actually goes through.
Well, I do too, and I think it'll be a good thing. I think, I don't know if you heard the show that I did last year whenever this balloon story came up here in Arizona. I got pretty hot about it then, and I said, who's investigating this? There are fire codes that were violated. There's airspace that's violated. There are other criminal codes that have been violated here. Who's investigating? Who's going to prosecute it? And it was all just sort of smoke and mirrored away here.
Well, maybe somebody heard you, and they're taking you up on your challenge.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. Thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you.
All right. That's a good point, don't you think, Walter?
Oh, yeah. It's you always have to look at, what gets used to set legal precedents, And the concern is, you know, you have the obvious positive one, like you mentioned, well, maybe this will help reduce or eradicate hoaxers. The negative aspect of it is, how will they apply this to nab somebody who may be not really doing something wrong, but they can get them under this, well, you're perpetuating a hoax thing or charge, you know?
So yeah, it could get really serious that way. It certainly could. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Oh, it's Charles out in Albuquerque.
Hi, Charles. Been a while since I heard from you.
Yeah, I've been busy, but I've been listening.
Well, it's good to hear from you again. What's on your mind?
Oh, I just interested in this little brouhaha you've been talking about. And it's interesting that somebody's charged these guys, but I can just see the legislature sitting there making these laws up, or the city council. It's not the sort of thing that the city council would ordinarily think about in making up laws, and so I don't know if there's really a law against it.
Well, there are generally, in every state and in every municipality, there are generally laws about open burning without a permit. There are generally that could, I think, in these cases, be applied because they can be applied. Those laws can be applied to you starting a barbecue fire when there is a advisory out saying no open fires.
I think it'll be interesting to see if this goes anywhere because, like you, I kind of smell a rat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so these guys did this. And I saw their video. It was pretty clear. They were attaching balloons and flares with fishing line and letting them go, lighting them off and letting them go. And like you say, it certainly is a dangerous situation, could be.
Charles, a break just took over. Are you willing to hang on through the break? Because I've got a question for you. Hello, Charles?
Yeah, I'm willing.
Yeah, hang on. I'll be with you right after the break. All right, folks, we'll be back. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We have Walter Bosley online. We also have Charles from New Mexico. Charles, you are someone who would know this because of your profession. So let me ask you. Case comes before you, and I'm representing one side, and the opposite side is trying to prove that these guys did this on the date and time that they say they did it. And they offer as evidence these videos that have no date stamps, no time stamps. We have a telephone call to a TV station, allegedly, but we only hear their voices. We don't hear the TV station. And I challenge that evidence and say, okay, it proves that they lit flares, and it proves that they attached them to balloons and sent them skyward. It doesn't prove when. Would that be a fairly weighty argument with that evidence?
Or where? It certainly would be.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would have to know that I had jurisdiction, first of all.
Good point. Good point.
If it takes place in my area, then I don't have jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you have to prove the provenance of the evidence. It's not good enough just to have a video. You have to know who shot it, where it was shot, when it was shot, and what the conditions were.
Absolutely.
And they have to be there to testify to it.
Well, even if they are there and they say, yeah, it was at that date and time, I could successfully challenge that and say you can't prove it.
Well, if they admit it, then I would accept that. But On the other hand, if they challenge it and say, no, you can't prove, you can prove we shot this, but you can't prove when we did it or where we did it, so you can't really hold us guilty, I would have to say they have a point there.
Yeah. Now, if I contact the TV station and I ask them if on the date at the time they say they made that call, is there anyone willing to testify that they know for sure that they answered that call and that is what was said? I can't find anyone at the TV station to testify to that. That would be a successful challenge as well, wouldn't it?
Yes, they'd have to have a witness to say, yes, this was the recording of the call that came in on such and such a date and time, and I'm the person who took it.
All right, now you said you smell a rat. What rat do you smell?
Well, where do these guys come off being so hard on UFO researchers? I mean, have they never seen anything strange in the sky?
Well, I guess not.
It just seems I don't know. I suppose there are skeptics out there who truly don't believe that there are UFOs, but I guess I can't see why people wouldn't believe the proof that's right in front of their eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. Charles, I want to thank you for the call. I have to run along. It's good to hear from you again.
Well, thanks for being there.
All right. Now, Walter, he's a judge.
That's what I gathered.
Yeah. And you see, folks, what I'm saying about the evidence, there's a judge. And he says the video evidence as presented is not sufficient. And now, it is sufficient to prove that these two guys tied flares to balloons and lit them and sent them aloft. It's sufficient to do that. It does not prove that those are the lights that were in the sky above Morristown. It does not prove date and time. It doesn't prove where it happened. And so when we take the evidence and we apply to their evidence the very same standards they demand to be applied to UFO investigators and UFO researchers, their evidence has more holes than Swiss cheese. Walter, we're just about out of time. We've got a few minutes left here. Let me put it this way. Sum up for us what you think we're looking at here.
Well, initially, I think that it appears greatly to be, you know, what it is. A couple of guys did something with an intent that I think backfired on them. Now, there's a possibility that there was someone behind or something behind, you know, this action that had its own intent, but you know, this is something that has backfired in a way that might actually come out and support the possibility that it indeed was a UFO, which they are trying to, you know, debunk, so to speak.
To me, there are indications that the whole thing was orchestrated, and I'm not saying that that was done by the CIA or the NSA or the military, or that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying this thing has fingerprints all over it of having been managed and orchestrated. And I don't think these two guys are the masterminds. There is someone behind it. It could be a private group or a private individual. Or it could be someone who is attached in some way to the UFO secrecy.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think these two guys are the orchestrators. I think they're the players in the orchestra.
It being a private interest that was behind this could explain why it was so sloppy or that there were holes in it.
That could be. Let's take our last telephone call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Rick from Kentucky.
Hi, Rick. Speak up good and loud for us.
Okay. I'll be interested to see, after all the news media coverage and whatever, they were charged by the local authorities. Maybe some federal prosecutor gets wind of this. Maybe they... he would be interested in charging them under the federal statutes. It'll be interesting to see if the government wants to pursue them.
It will be interesting, but I predict that the federal authorities will not get involved in it. They will say, okay, these guys are being prosecuted already. However, considering what geese did to a flight that had to land in the Hudson River, and that's just birds that are supposed to be in the sky.
Exactly.
It might be worth the feds taking a look at the science teacher and his salesman buddy.
Yeah, I think it would. I'm a private pilot, and I'd hate to think that stuff was up in the air at night that I could run into it.
Absolutely. Hey, thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you, Kevin.
All right. Yeah, good point.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's ultimately the thing that's going to, be rightfully invoked in things like this, is this is potentially reckless endangerment and, you know, God forbid, some type of manslaughter.
And it could be that. I mean, it wasn't, but it could have been.
Yeah.
I still say, from my point of view, as a cop, an ex-cop, an investigator, this thing has fingerprints all over it. It looks orchestrated, and if this was a crime that I had been assigned to investigate, I would be looking beyond these two guys.
Yeah.
For who's behind it? Would you?
Oh, absolutely. My question is, not that there isn't evidence that there's someone behind it. It's whether these guys were witting or unwitting.
So for you, is it a done deal that there's somebody behind it?
Yes, there is a spectrum of who it could be, but yes, I would agree with you. There's something fishy about this.
Okay, well, we're just almost at the end of the show, and I want to thank you for being with us this evening. Stay on the line with me a
sure.
moment, if you will. Well, there you have it, folks. I mean, the purpose of last night and the purpose of tonight is to show you what happens if you just take the standards that UFO investigators and researchers have to meet, apply it to the hoaxers, see what happens. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want, just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.